Alaskans will pick the state's next governor on November 6th. There are three candidates in contention this year, and they all have different visions for what Alaska needs to be fiscally stable into the future. So what does Democrat Mark Begich think the best path forward should be to ensure there are good jobs available, a well-trained, productive workforce to take on the work, and a budget plan that helps the state thrive and be fiscally stable beyond fluctuations in the price of oil? We'll ask today when Mr. Begich is our guest on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Lead is bad for the health of Alaskans, especially for young children. It affects developing brains, so even small amounts are unsafe. Lead can be hiding in older paint, workplaces, ammunition, fishing weights, aviation gas, and marine paint. If you think you or your child has been exposed, ask a healthcare provider about testing. Get the lead out, Alaska. Learn more at leadfree.dhss.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. What should Alaska's future look like? A continued quest for keeping taps full? Finding new ways to create products from Alaska's wild-caught seafood? Investment in searching for new ways to diversify the economy? All of these? And what's the best plan for keeping the permanent fund permanent? The three main candidates who are campaigning to be Alaska's next governor, there are others, but the three main candidates all have different visions. Today, we're hearing from Democrat Mark Begich. Last week, Republican Mike Dunleavy was our guest on Talk of Alaska and Alaska Insight. You can find both of those programs on our website, alaskapublic.org. And next week, the incumbent Bill Walker joins us. Mr. Begich, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
And welcome to your running mate, Lieutenant Governor candidate Deborah Call.
Thank you, Lori, for having us here today.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining, and we'll learn more about your ideas, Ms. Call, and why you're running as we progress through the program. I want to let Alaskans know that you can also join our conversation. If you have questions for the candidates, you can call statewide 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. And you can also email us talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Mr. Begich, name three specific policy areas that you have disagreement with the governor outside of the permanent fund. Give us three specific areas of
policy. Well, I would say both the governor and Senator Dunleavy, because those are the two other people in the campaign. I think first off, of the permanent fund, a big difference between the two of them. First off, I think Senator Dunleavy's approach is dangerous. It is not long-term. Within a short period of time, there won't be dividend. There won't be resources to deal with the state budget. On the governor's proposal, it leaves it in the hands of the legislature still. Every year, they'll end up debating how big or how small the dividend will be instead of focus on the big issues like crime and education and jobs, as you talked about at the opening there. My approach, the way we've laid it out, Deborah and I, and that is the permanent fund needs to be formulated in a way that protects it not only for this generation, for future. You said the word correctly. It wasn't called temporary fund. It was called the permanent fund. Right now, there's $18 billion in the earnings reserve, which the legislature can tap into at any given point with a simple majority. That's dangerous, I think. You need to take a large portion of that, put it into the corpus where only it can be decided by the public. Then you take the permanent, the percent of market value formula. 50% of it goes to the dividend. In a constitutionally protected formula, not only for this generation, but for multiple generations to come. The other 50%, again, constitutionally protected, would go toward education, K through 12 plus pre-K. This is an important part of any economy, any great state. You want to have a strong education system. This will replace general fund money. So in essence, you constitutionally protect the dividend. You create a long-term path for it. This year, it would have been around $2,000, as an example. The education funding would replace general fund and therefore be more stable and long-term. Again, these would be constitutionally protected, voted by the people, and only can be touched by the people then. This gets out of the hands of the politicians, which is what has been the problem. In the last 4 years, they drained out the constitutional budget savings, $14 billion gone. Now they want access to the earnings reserve, and I believe they'll drain that down just as much. So our plan is more stable, long-term, and has an approach that's going to be good for long-term generation. The second issue...
I was just going to ask about other areas of policy where you have disagreement.
Well, that's a big one. A lot of people talk about, especially as your radio station touches all across the state, the biggest issue we hear about is around the permanent fund and the sustainability of it. And neither of my opponents has a long-term plan on that. Second, on crime, this is the number one issue that people talk about. I think there's, again, differences between my opponents. Senator Dunleavy has a lot of great slogans, but not a lot of depth to it. The governor has talked about it, but no proof and end result. I've had to deal with this when I was mayor. We deal with guns, gangs, and drugs, and we laid out a comprehensive plan of action when I was mayor. We need to do the same thing here. On my website, baggage.com, you can get more detail, but we need to hire back the 40 police or state troopers that are currently funded but not filled positions, 20 in the correctional facilities out in Seward that are not funded or funded but not filled today. We need to be more innovative in how we deal with police office or public safety in our state. We need to partner with the feds and the state, feds and the local community, developing long-term strategies in dealing with crime in our communities. There's going to be a chunk of money coming from opioid issues from the federal government. We need to use that the right way, and not just around opioids. We need to look at substance abuse. 80% of the folks in prison are because of substance abuse, and so we need to broaden that spectrum. So we've done it. I've done it when it comes to crime and making sure that we have a comprehensive plan. I think that's one of the big issues that differ between me and my opponents. The last is just the look at how we look at our education system. You know, we are continuing to do the same thing. Every year there's a fight over the increment. How much money can we add? How much money can they delete? It's amazing this year everyone's taking credit because they didn't have pink slips for employees and the budget got a little more money. Well, it's easy when you've cut it for 3 years, giving a little bit back. And second, it's an election year. You're not going to have pink slips. That's just not how it works. People don't like doing that. So again, as I mentioned earlier about the permanent fund, that's one way to create stable education. But we also have to relook at our higher education. Imagine what it could be. We shouldn't be waiting 2 years for people to get into the nursing program, when in reality that's the fastest growing industry that we have. We need to re-examine our education system to meet the growth in our jobs of maybe fisheries, healthcare, tourism, transportation, making sure they're meeting those needs so we grow our own population to fill these needs.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and the guests today are Democrat candidate Mark Begich, who is running for governor, along with Democrat Deborah Call, who is running for lieutenant governor. You can call if you have questions or comments, if you'd like to know more about some of the ideas and the platform priorities that Mr. Begich just laid out. You can give us a call at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. And I want to drill down in some of those areas that you've talked about, but let's take a phone call. Let's go to Jim in Fairbanks. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Good morning, Mark and Deborah.
Good morning.
This is Jim in Fairbanks. Well, sustainability, it seems to me we have an enormous advantage in Alaska. We have a wonderful wildlife spectacle to offer as ecotourism. And I think I'd like to hear both of you talk more about what is possible as an alternative to a petroleum future. Surely Alaska's watchable living wildlife is a building block. And ecotourism is, or tourism is already an enormous contributor to the economy. We have a governor who refuses to do much of anything, using the Stampede Trail as an example, creating a buffer for Denali Park wolves. There's an enormous interest in our national parks, for example. So I'd like to hear a few words about the possibilities for Alaska, using especially concerning living watchable wildlife. It's an enormous advantage, and it hasn't been given credit.
All right, Jim, thanks so much. You know, I'm glad that he raised this because we just had a story as part of our Midnight Oil podcast series about the rate of tourism, the increase in tourism to see polar bears in Kaktovik, which went from a couple of hundred people to a couple of thousand. And although that's probably in some ways good for the local economy, it certainly creates challenges too in areas where there aren't many resources and they're expensive. So how do you balance all that and raise tourism without affecting communities, especially in rural Alaska, in a negative way?
Yeah, these are it's a great question, and tourism is a fast-growing economy for us in Alaska and continues to grow. I will mention the gentleman, Fairbanks is a big issue, the buffer zone around Denali Park. You know, I support the buffer zone. The governor does not. Senator Dunleavy does not. Just as I support Prop 1, again, around our fishing industry, I support it. The other two do not. You know, the ecotourism is growing. People come to Alaska. We live here because of this incredible, I mean, today when you're outside, it's a beautiful day. We live here because of this environment. It gives us what a lot of people don't have in the lower 48 and wish they did. But it is a balance. And as we see more and more tourists coming to Alaska, I love to see the mom and pop operations because they're managing it in a way that's better for their local community. What's the best way to, when someone comes, when those thousands of people come to visit the area to see polar bears, what's the best way to manage that rather than big cruise ships or big operations? I think that's a huge part of the equation. But it is part of the job of the governor and lieutenant governor to protect this environment in a way that ensures that it's good for us today, but for multiple generations to come. And when you think about that buffer just around Denali, the Fairbanks community wants this. They've signed petitions. They've done everything they could. And it makes sense because people come to the park to see the incredible wildlife. And if we're now allowing people to bait them out of there and hunt them, the wolves, for example, that is not what people are coming to see. What they're coming to see is this incredible natural habitat. And so anything we can do to protect it, same reason why both Deborah and I oppose Pebble Mine, because the damage that that could do to an incredible fisheries in the Bristol Bay region would be something you cannot fix over multiple generations. So he's right, we need a governor who understands this, but also knows how to balance this between development and making sure the local communities have the right balance when it comes to these kinds of tourist opportunities.
Well, when we talk about tourism, the especially the economic effects, impacts of it, it is, by comparison to the amount of revenue that oil brings into the state, it's a drop in the bucket, even combined with fisheries and other things. So how do we get to the point where we can more diversify and stabilize the economy here so that we're not just so focused on the price of a barrel of oil in the future?
Well, Lori, this has been the problem. See, the state governed for years and even more recently. All they do is focus on how much the price of oil is because they need to fill the state coffers. In the reality, the fastest growing industries are healthcare, tourism, transportation, fisheries. These are the ones that are growing. Matter of fact, now, you know, people say, let's bring back more oil and gas. That's fine. I'm all for it. But it has less, 25% less workforce needed today than it did 5 years ago because of the technology and utilization of technology. But when we think of things like renewable energy, that we're building these great wind turbines in Western Alaska or solar, we should now be growing our own people to do the technology and the management and repairs and servicing of these facilities. But today, 30% of the budget is dependent on the price of oil. A chunk of it now, because the revenues from the permanent fund are partially utilized to support government as well as federal dollars and local resources, you can have this broader sweep. But if you watch, for example, yesterday's debate at the chamber, my two opponents defaulted back into the old play, natural resources. That's an important part of our state, but there is so much more. And we don't have to focus on this like we used to just fill the coffers of the state. It used to be 80% of the budget was oil and gas revenues. Today, it's 30%. It gives us a unique opportunity. And the problem and challenge we have right now, people, my opponents, are focused on the same old business of the last 50 years. The future is much brighter than that. You know, we're losing. The fastest population leaving the state are millennials. Why? Because they don't see their future here. If we don't figure out how to broaden this horizon and figure out these new economies, we're never going to keep people here long-term. So because the budget is designed now with the way I've laid it out in our permanent fund idea, less than 30% of the budget is oil and gas. So now, instead of the state just focus on how to fill their coffers to get the biggest budget they can, we can now focus on how to expand the economy, create more jobs in the economy, more opportunities. That's what we should be doing.
So I want to give Deborah a chance to get in here now so we can learn a little about your career path and your work experience. What sparked your interest in running for lieutenant governor?
Well, as you said, my name is Deborah Call, and I am a lifelong Alaskan. I was born in Palmer, and I'm Dena'ina Athabascan. My grandmother, Delia Nikita Stefan, fished from the beaches of Cook Inlet in the 20s, and so this is my lifelong home. And so the reason for me running is because this is my lifelong home. I've worked in rural Alaska after I got my MBA in the Lower 48. I worked with business development. And one of the things, Lori and Jim, that you talked about was ecotourism. In working with the company I worked with, which was Community Enterprise Development Corporation, a 501c4 nonprofit, we worked with local villages that wanted tourism in their community. It's a clean industry. It was an alternative to other things that they didn't have or didn't want in their community. So in the communities of Gamble and Savunga, Kodiak, to some extent Tyonek, we brought in the opportunity for tourism. And what we did is we prepared the community for the number of people that will come in, the questions they can anticipate, how to welcome, how to guide, how to teach. And so that was so much a part of the community, and it was extremely successful in Gamble and Savunga, where the National Geographic ship would come by, dock, and they would let the visitors walk around through the village. The visitors would greet the residents, and they would also go to sites where birders enjoy looking at the birds of the area. So it was a controlled, you know, visit, but it was an exciting visit for many of the visitors because they were specially guided through the community as well as the opportunity to purchase arts and crafts.
You wrote in an op-ed, this is a quote, "I know rural Alaska has tremendous untapped potential to be a major economic driver if we invest in it." Tell us about what you see along these lines for building that economy in rural Alaska. What's that going to take?
It's going to take a strong educational system. We're ranked at the bottom of the 50 states, about 46, 47, in terms of the nation quality of education. Rural Alaska has 80% of their teachers come from outside the state. That creates an imbalance in the community in terms of where our educational system is going. You have a system of education that really, if you relied upon the local environment, as well as teaching from the local environment, you would get so much more relevance and understanding from our children. And so many more of the teachers would understand what their children need, as opposed to others from outside the state that really don't quite get into the culture. And so I found that in one particular case, a young lady knows Yupik, goes back to the community, can teach effectively, understands the family structures, understands the language, and it's so important to have that element when you're teaching.
Well, let's follow up with a caller on the line from Anchorage. Don wants to talk about education. Hi, Don.
Hi. She's right up my alley. That's exactly what I was driving at. Is keep the education in the schools and supplement the education of the parents and help educate them more also, because this is where a lot of the arguments come in. I've been up here 50 years, and I've seen too many cases where it's totally uncalled for parents and teachers to get together and just argue and beat each other over the head and up and down. And the kid looks on this and he figures, gee, you know, what kind of an education am I getting out of this? What am I really learning? And it's pathetic in a way. And yes, we do need to do an awful lot more in the educational system. I pointed out to somebody a while back, I said, how much about Constitution do they teach in school? You get them a pamphlet or something, the kids don't know, it gets a once over, and who cares? And then they turn around and say, well, gee, I don't know, what are my rights? Civil rights aren't worth anything anymore. And it's just pathetic that we're not much, much higher on the educational scale for this country, because we should be. We should be way up at the top.
Well, thank you, Don, for your thoughts on
education. You are very welcome. And Mark, I voted for you every time you came up in public office. I told you before, and I'll say it again. Every time you run, you got my vote.
Thank you very much, Don. And just a quick thought on that.
Yeah, please follow up.
You know, education, and I think Deborah will agree, we travel quite a bit around the state, not always together, and what we find is crime, permanent fund, education. These are kind of the top three things that people want to talk about. And education, in a lot of ways, when you see us at 46 out of 50, you know, when I was born and raised, matter of fact, in this part of town here, East Anchorage, and used to swim in Gravel Pit Lake and play kick the can with a, you know, old tin Folgers can. And education was an important part, and we were in the top 10. We were some of the best places. Today, we're not.
Nope.
And if we want to have a thriving economy and a growing economy, you have to have a base of education. And the challenge that we're going to give, if we're fortunate and the voters vote for us, we're going to give the challenge to the post-secondary education community as well as the K-12, is if you can reimagine what education could be if you had a unique way of developing and distributing it and making it happen, what would that be? Because if we're not challenging our systems like that, but all we're worried about is how much money they get each year, we're never going to think of the big things that we should be doing and making sure that our educational system is the best in the country and offering great things for our kids.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and our guests today are Governor Candidate Democrat Mark Begich and Lieutenant Governor Candidate Deborah Call. You can join us at 1-800-478-8255 if you have questions. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 550-8422. 550-8422 is the number in Anchorage. So the legislature's nonpartisan budget analysts say that the state's main savings account, you were talking about the CBR earlier, will have less than $2 billion in it at the end of the current fiscal year. Is there a spot, a low point in the CBR where you would consider new taxes?
Well, first off, you know, if they would have just taken the CBR and decided, and this would have been a radical move, and I think I would have considered it for sure, taking it, pushed it into the corpus of the permanent fund, and then determined what that revenue stream coming out of there, you could probably fill that gap that we have today almost pretty close. But they didn't do that. They spent it every year, and people say, look at this tough decision they all made. Well, yeah, when you have free money sitting there, you can fill any budget. When I was mayor the first year when I came in, they were using one-time money before I came into the mayor's office to fill the gap. And I told them, no, we're not doing that anymore. If you bring me a budget that has it, we're going to veto it. And the reason we did that is because it had to force the conversation about where we're going to get our revenues. What comes in goes out. You can't just keep using savings account or you'll break the bank at some point. And in the state, there's, I think, three quick things they need to do. As I mentioned earlier, they need to resolve the permanent fund issue. Otherwise, they will debate that every single year, and they will peel away from the reserve account. Second to this, they need to take a chunk of that reserve that's currently there and put it in the corpus so they can't have it. So it forces them to decide, how are they going to have a long-term financial budget? What does that mean? You're probably going to have some revenues. What will it be? The governor has proposed 7 or 8 different ones. They've all failed. Senator Dunleavy believes in magic dust, that somehow all the money will appear and magic will happen, and which is just not factual. Matter of fact, one of the more conservative fiscal groups have actually criticized him the last two meetings he's had with the chamber because of his inability to see this value. So will we need revenues? Yes. What will that look like? We need 11 senators and 21 House members. That is the task. And right now, you don't have that mix.
And do you think that may have to include taxes at some point?
You're going to have some new revenues, and they're going to have to be taxes or a combination of things. But the reality is you can't get there yet. And I think everyone has tried. I mean, They had a regressive income tax, which was basically taxing people who earned wages and everyone else off the hook. They wanted to do a gas tax, which hurt people in rural Alaska. I mean, they just haven't thought this out. Deal with the two biggest challenges, the permanent fund first, get that resolved, the dividend, get the education, which is a sizable amount of the budget, off the equation, and then focus on what are the remaining services and how are we going to take, you know, fund those. And it'll be a combination of new revenues, but also how do you leverage other resources that are out there. We had to do it when I was mayor. We can do it in the state. But everyone wants to throw down some magic dust and it's all going to happen. That's not how it works.
Well, let's take another call. Harry is on the line from Anchorage and has a comment or question about the permanent fund dividend.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hello, Harry.
Since I've been in Alaska for the 43 years that I've been here, the most beneficial thing that that our state's done is the permanent fund dividend for working class people, middle class people, which I'm a part of that. I came up here to work on the pipeline 43 years ago. It's been really, really good to me. But at the same time that we started using the money in the earnings reserve to fund government, we cut taxes to the effective rate of taxes on oil to one-third of what our traditional rate from 1977 till the present has been. Was about 29% to 30%. Now we're at 13% to 14% of the gross value of oil. And that's where the money is. And the permanent fund dividend is by far the most beneficial to working people and to poor people that we've done in this state. I tried to put the dividend into the Constitution four different times while I was in the legislature, and the Republicans killed it each year. And I want to see something different done than just sitting on our hands and spending our savings. So take it away.
Well, and how, yes, yeah. I think that's a good lead into how would you work with the legislature
sure.
and its current composition to get the priorities that you've lined out done.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of hand-wringing. People blame each other. You know, we live in a world of politics today where it's the blame game, toxic environment, negative. And here's how I've looked at it all my life. I mean, if I think about this, I served 6 years in the Senate. I had to work with people from Bernie Sanders to Ted Cruz. And if you can deal with that, everything else is not that hard. I was almost 10 years on the Anchorage Assembly local government. And when you been through that experience, you also learn how to work with people, a variety of people. When I was mayor, I had to work with a very diverse assembly in getting my policies and plans put forward. We only had one veto in 6 years, and it was because they wouldn't allow my public safety department head, my chief of police, speak on an issue. And I vetoed it so he could speak the next week. So working with the legislature is you got to find it's about building relationships, finding what is important to them, what they think is a priority, sitting down with them on a regular basis, which, you know, think about this. If you're not sitting down with the majorities and the minority party prior to the session, you have no idea what their priorities are. And you need to do that so you understand where the give and take will be. I do believe all Alaskans are here because we have a common thread that binds us, and we just need to find that. And I think what's happened in Juneau, even under this current governor and the former senator who's left the Senate, Dunleavy, is they've just gotten so partisan and so toxic that they're unwilling to talk about the ideas that need to be put on the table. And I've done this all my time in public service of working with very diverse groups to solve problems and move forward rather than sitting there having political bomb throwing, which is, I think, what's happened a lot more than it should be.
We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with the Democrat candidate for governor, Mark Begich, and Lieutenant Governor candidate, Deborah Call, as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Funding for Talk of Alaska was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you. Lead is bad for the health of Alaskans, especially for young children. It affects developing brains, so even small amounts are unsafe. Lead can be hiding in older paint, workplaces, ammunition, fishing weights, aviation gas, and marine paint. If you think you or your child has been exposed, ask a healthcare provider about testing. Get the lead out, Alaska. Learn more at leadfree.dhss.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Democrat Mark Begich and candidate for governor is in the studio, as is Lieutenant Governor candidate Democrat Deborah Call. You can join our conversation if you'd like at 1-800-478-8255. That's the number statewide, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422. 550-8422. Let's go to Anchor Point. Kristen is in Anchor Point. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for letting me be on. Mr. Begich, I have always admired you, and I admired your father as well. I'm wondering, bring it back to the state troopers. I live down here in Anchor Point on the Kenai Peninsula, and most of the Kenai Peninsula has no local police force except in places like Homer and up there in the Kenai-Soldotna area. So the whole area pretty much is trooper territory. And I'm concerned because over the years, I have noticed that the troopers are becoming less and less effective at serving and protecting, but more and more effective at snooping out revenue sources, habitual harassment of people who drive the poor cars. I think your wheel is wobbling. Let me see all your paperwork. And I understand that they're doing this because they're being told to do this. As far as I'm concerned, I think the state troopers of Alaska need a big shakeup, and that shakeup should start at the top, because I think several of the people running the state troopers are literally not doing their job because they are using the troopers as a political basketball for their own power and their own ability to influence politics.
Well, Kristen, you sound frustrated. Let's let candidate Begich respond to that. What do you think is needed for especially communities that aren't the urban centers,
right,
that need help with law enforcement and crime?
And it's not only troopers, but village police officers. It's kind of a list of needs and services. She's right in the broad sweep that we need to figure out. You know, right now they've worked in these stovepipes. You got corrections doing their thing. You got public safety doing their thing. You got the courthouse now closed one day a week. They're all in their own worlds. And I think one of the things I've suggested, and I would do this, I would have a mini cabinet made up of public safety, corrections, court system, health and human services, focused on how do we revamp this system, because it is a broken system right now. And they're just running from call to call, or they're, you know, for example, down in Southeast, if you're in Western Alaska and you call trooper dispatch, you're getting Ketchikan's dispatch to dispatch out in Western Alaska. That makes no sense. There's no connection between Ketchikan and Western Alaska, other than it's in Alaska, in the sense of the communities and what they need. There needs to be a restructuring of how we deliver the public safety services. The folks I talk to, I visit as much as I can, every place I go, a trooper station in these communities. And it's a complaint after complaint about lack of manpower, lack of resources, inability for people to understand what they're dealing with on the ground. And we have to do exactly the same thing I did when I was mayor. We told the police department, you got 90 days. Tell me the good, the bad, and the ugly, and let's get busy. And we did it. The troopers need the same thing, and our public safety system needs the same thing, or we're never going to move forward.
Deborah, would you like to add to that idea, especially as it relates to, you were talking earlier about your Dena'ina Athabascan heritage. We know that in a lot of predominantly Native communities in Alaska, there is a huge lack of law enforcement, and this has been a chronic situation for decades. What's needed?
Well, thank you, Lori. What is needed is one of the ideas that Mark proposed, and it has a lot to do with his ability to leverage resources, which is something I've done in working in nonprofit as well as in for-profit. But one of the things that I think that will be very beneficial is to have cross-training. In other words, the VPSOs come into Anchorage, learn how Anchorage does law enforcement, learn the latest techniques, issues, what is coming down, what is coming up, what to anticipate, how to work with the federal government, the FBI. Then also for our Anchorage police to go to the villages, understand the culture, understand the issues, understand how families work, understand how to deal with difficult issues involving certainly Alaska Native people. We're a large part of the correctional system in terms of the population. And I think that that is one of the things that we do need to correct. And one of the things I like is the fact that we can leverage the existing expertise and resources within the state and teach each other, because I think that's very powerful.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Sean is in Anchorage and wants to discuss budget cuts. Hi, Sean.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. This call or this question is actually for Mr. Begich. And let me also add that I've been here for 38 years, so I've been here for quite a while. But when we have budget issues at our own home, there's two things that we can do. We can go out and get a second job and create more revenue, and or we can make budget cuts, basically maybe get into a cheaper car or a cheaper apartment or a cheaper house or something like that. But there's budget cuts involved. So I know, Mark, that you mentioned new revenues and leveraging resources, but I haven't heard anything about a balanced budget. I know that there's state income tax that we can levy. We can do a state sales tax or even PFD money. But my question is very simply, what exactly would you plan on cutting from the budget when it comes to budget cuts? Because you can't have the conversation of a balanced budget or even fixing our fiscal problem if you don't start talking about budget cuts. So my question is specifically, what would you support for budget cuts? Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
yeah,
Sean.
Thank you very, very much, Sean. And first off, anytime you deal with a budget, and I had to do it when I was mayor, you deal with a combination of things. You grow your economy to help create new revenue streams in a sense of more economic development. Second, you reform the way you deliver services. Third, you will have resources or issues you have to cut or curtail and not do anymore. And then you have to look at revenues. It's a combination. I've been in business for 14 years, since I was the age of 14. And you have this combination of things you have to do. Specifically, I can't lay out here's the three or four things, because that's going to be dependent on how and what we do in each of these departments. And I'll be working with department heads, but I'll give you some examples, Sean. For example, in public assistance, the state has two computer systems operating for the last 3.5 years side by side. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And the reason they've done it is because they're afraid to turn off the older one because the information might be lost. My view is obviously the contractors on either one of these computers should be fired, because obviously they haven't done their job and make the transformation. I can show you department after department where I've seen this kind of inefficiencies that we could reduce and fix and save money within the state system. Another example, Medicaid, $800 million. If we just, I laid out an idea when it comes to chronic illness. 70% of the cost of Medicaid is chronic and preventable diseases. If we would just focus a little bit on that, you could probably easily save between 5 and 10% of that cost. That's between $40 and $80 million a year if we just would focus on it. Instead, what they do, they focus on how much more money they can give it. The better approach is, can we revamp the system and deliver a more efficient delivery system? I believe we can. I think the state has not done that over the long haul because they've been too busy fighting the battles every year. Last 2 years, they have 8 special sessions because they couldn't get their work done in the 90-day sessions. So the inefficiency of how they manage the system is outrageous. And I say this is not to the people working every day in the system. This is to the leadership at the top, because their inability to focus on the long-term vision of where the state needs to go. So do I see some opportunities? Yes. Will there be more once elected and sitting down with department heads and people working in the departments? Absolutely. There always is room for improvement, and we should be doing that every single day.
We have another question on the budget. David is also on Anchorage. Hi, David.
Hey, hello. Hey, Mark, this is a question for you. This is, again, the budget, and I'm not one to push cuts. I think we've cut it pretty good. I want to talk about how we're going to get more revenue. I think Walker came up with the right plan. These are hard things to swallow, but it's fiscal reality. And I want to know, how do you feel about limiting the permanent fund so we can use some revenue from that, enacting some type of tax, and hitting the oil companies? I mean, I've been here a long time. I feel like the free ride needs to come to an end. We need to balance our budget. So I leave it up to you, and I'll listen to the radio. Thank you.
Thanks, David. And I answered partially this at the beginning, but I'll repeat it, and that is on the permanent fund, what I would impose is the percent of market value formula, which the legislature did. But the difference is I would take it out of their hands. 50% of it would go to a constitutionally guaranteed dividend. The other 50% I would dedicate to education, therefore replacing general fund money. So then it's off the table and we don't have to debate that in the sense of the increment financing or funding you need. That would free up money within the budget. Second thing I would do is, as I just mentioned to Sean's question, there's a lot of opportunity for efficiencies we need to gain within the state departments. And third is you'll need some revenue, and it will be a combination between individuals and companies and so forth. But once we do this on the revenue end, we're done having this debate, because if we're going to have this debate every single year, we never get on with solving the big issues, which is crime and education and diversifying the economy. That's what we need to focus on. We're going to have to do it all in one fell swoop, be done with it. And just a thought of yours is, yes, Governor Walker proposed a half a dozen or more ideas on revenue. None of them passed because the ability to work with people, you have to sit down with them and figure out where that middle point is to be able to get the success you need and show them the whole package. The only thing they did was the legislature and the governor decided to take it from the most, the people who can least afford it by cutting their dividend in half. In the YK district alone, in the Yukon-Kuskokwim, it has cost them $76 million out of that economy, cash economy, the most impoverished part of our state and the second most impoverished in the country. So I think I agree with you, but let's make it a balanced approach. Let's make it do it one time so we're not having this battle every year, and then get on with the bigger things that grow our state and make our state a great place to live and retire.
This is Talk of Alaska, and Governor candidate Democrat Mark Begich and Lieutenant Governor candidate Deborah Call are our guests today in the studio. We're going to go back to the phones to Jim in Eagle River, and I think his question mirrors one that came in by email too about voters' concern regarding the vote having a three-way race. Jim in Eagle River, hello.
Hello, Mark. I've supported you from the beginning in your career. I've voted for you from assembly to senator, and yet when you entered this race for governor at this point in time, I was angry because obviously the vote is going to be split between a very reasonable Governor Walker and you, and my fear is that the outlier Senator Dunleavy is going to end up on top because the vote is split, and that's the last thing on earth I want to see happen. What are you going to do at the end of this race? Dunleavy is the winner because the vote has been split.
Well, first off, I don't think Dunleavy is going to be the winner, Jim. I would say this, that first off, Senator Dunleavy has been stuck in the polls between 32 and 35. Also, I hear what you're saying about Governor Walker. I supported him 4 years ago because of the Medicaid expansion. I lost my Senate seat over the health care vote, but I knew we needed to expand Medicaid, and I wanted to make sure that was done. But the governor and I don't share some, I think, critical core values. Core values like I'm pro-choice. He is not. I'm for Prop 1. He is not. And Dunleavy, the same thing on both of those. You know, I would approach the whole process of how to deal with this budget in a different way. I support constitutionally guaranteeing the dividend in a responsible, sustainable way. you know, I'm in the race, Jim, and that's how it works. So people who want to keep talking about it, you need to figure out what you want to do. And do you want to vote for your values, or are we going to settle for just what's okay? No disrespect to the governor or Senator Dunleavy, but I decided to get in this race because there's so many people. I see them every day. Deborah sees them every day that are not at the tables of power. They don't have lobbyists. They don't have special interest groups that come and talk to them. You know, all the people that called me to tell me you should think about getting out of the race are people who have access to the powers that currently exist. There's so many Alaskans that don't have that access. And I believe that I'm the candidate, and Deborah, the candidate for lieutenant governor, that will represent the people who are not there, not in the halls of Juneau, not at these fancy events like the chamber yesterday, lobbying for their issues. This is who we represent. This is who we're going to fight for every single day. And my values are different than the governor's, and clearly different than the radical views of Senator Dunleavy, who wants to go to a voucher program to destroy education, has no plans how to solve the dividend other than spend every dime and bankrupt the state. I can go through the list. People have to decide, do they want a state moving to the future? Or do you want a state battling out every single session or multiple special sessions over issues like the budget? Or do we want to think about how we're going to improve education, how we're going to make sure that we have a safe community, how we're going to make sure that we have jobs for the future of these young people who want to stay here? I hear you, Jim, but I'm in this race to the end. I'm running because of our values and for the people who are not at the tables of power, that don't have the time, honestly, to call in today because they're working three jobs, or a single parent that I met, or the young person I met in Bethel who, with their mother, explained to me the problem that they had because now they don't have as much permanent fund dividend as they used to help take care of putting food on their plate when the fish aren't running or the hunting season's bad.
We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Democrat candidate for governor Mark Begich and Lieutenant Governor candidate Deborah Call, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com. And by Stronghearts Native Helpline, offering peer-to-peer support and resources for Native Americans affected by domestic violence. Safe, confidential, and toll-free, 1-844-7-NATIVE. This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Let's go to Homer now. And Milan is in Homer. Hi.
Hey, how's it going? Milan here in Homer.
Milan. Hello, Milan. Did you have a question?
Yes, I did. Well, kind of a comment. Thanks again for taking my call and taking the time to speak with me. And my comment was for Mr. Mitch Begich.
Mark Begich.
Oh, Mark Begich. Sorry, excuse me there.
And your question?
And, I just wanted to bring up, I run a business doing marine electrical work, specialty electric out of Homer, Alaska. And I'm always troubleshooting big problems, and I have a lot of respect for your position, being a politician, you have to solve a lot of big problems. And I'm always looking at how to solve things from the root. And I'm 26 years old, born and raised in Homer, Alaska. And I'd like to just point out that I think it could be very helpful for you to focus on getting kids more involved with marine electrical and marine refrigeration and marine diesel mechanics. And anything like that we could do to get technical classes in the schools, maybe even getting local companies to sponsor the classes to get kids involved and interested in it, I think could help keep them busy and keep them from getting sucked into the bad crowd, and could just overall help the economy and everybody in the state.
Well, thanks for the idea and the suggestion, Milan.
Thank you very much, Milan, and I appreciate your entrepreneur and you're willing to get into the business world. I've been in it since the age of 14. You know, I was not able to go on to higher education. I had 1 year of college. I had five brothers and sisters and business issues with our family business, and so I spent my time there. So I was not able to go on to higher education, even though I was the chair of the Post-Secondary Education Commission for the state for 7 years and the Student Loan Corporation. I think we need to give young people multiple choices of where and what kind of education they want. And that does mean ensuring that we have this new technology or trade schools or career education, whatever the new title is today. You know, when I was up in Naknek, I was shocked by the new meal plant, the fish meal plant they had. They're a fantastic facility, but the technology was so advanced, they had not thought about getting Alaskans trained to do it, so they bring in people. When we do our wind turbines, we ship people in to repair those. The business that you're in, this is a great idea to ensure that we keep new ideas, new business opportunities, and new education for our young people to be attracted to. So I agree with you. I think it's a great idea.
Let's stay with the phones for just a moment. Go to Martin in Fairbanks. Hello.
Yes, Mr. Bagage. I'm curious. You talked repeatedly about constitutionally guaranteeing the dividend as well as education funding. To me, that sounds like a constitutional amendment. And if so, how do you plan to go through that process? You know, which way? I think many Alaskans justifiably feel that we have the best state constitution there is and are somewhat reluctant to monkey with it. What do you, what process would you use to constitutionally guarantee these funds?
Well, the best part of it is that the public has to vote on it, so the voters will make that decision if it's the right decision. What I would do is work with the legislature to bring forward a constitutional amendment to be put on the ballot. I prefer to do it in 2019 through a mail-in ballot, which you're allowed to do in a special election. But again, the decision on anything that you add or delete from the Constitution has to be done by the vote of the people. It's a two-step process. First is the legislature and then the people. So I would want to put this onto the ballot and let the voters make that call.
All right. I have a question about climate change. Mm-hmm. That's listed as one of your priorities. Mm-hmm. What do you think Alaska's role should be in addressing the challenges?
I think both Deborah and I have talked about this. We get asked this a lot, especially in rural parts of the state. This is an important issue. We should be the leaders. We shouldn't be just the leaders within our own state, but nationally and internationally, we should utilize our university system in a much more aggressive way. We can look at climate change as, yes, it's negative, no question about it, the negative impacts, but we should also flip it the other way and say, what are these opportunities that we can utilize for Alaska? I think I know that I did this when I was mayor. We got aggressive about moving forward on a variety of projects. The state of Alaska has an idea, or someone's come to the state of Alaska for the last 2 years. It's a great idea. And it's creating a green bank. The green bank's concept is basically financing what I would consider low-hanging fruit, but there could be more complicated projects where they're basically moving from a carbon-based energy source for the state to a non-carbon-based, or lowering, doing projects that are conservation. And the Green Bank has actually shown, I think it's Connecticut, they've built one, very successful. It leverages more money. You put 10 in, you might get 20 or 30 back in leveraging against private sector dollars. It's a great way to finance facilities that need environmentally, facilities that will utilize less energy and emit less emissions. And it's a great tool. But the state has sat on this for the last 2 years, even though they've been presented with this idea, which makes no sense to me. So you can do a lot of things, but also we should be the place where people come.
We only have a couple of minutes left. Deborah, would you like to add something there?
Yes, I would. One of the things I think what we also need to plan for on this climate change is looking at the Northwest Passage. Since the Coast Guard is looking to add a cutter to the oceans in the Arctic Ocean area, and we see a lot of influence by Russia and other countries in this area, I think we need a plan going forward, because climate change is forcing some politics in an area that we've not planned for. And this is something I think that this should be a priority for us in the new administration.
All right. Thank you for raising that. Let's take one more quick call. We only have a couple of minutes left. Sheila is in Anchorage. Sheila, do you have a quick question?
I do. Thanks for taking my call. I live in South Anchorage. I'm worried about crime, and I'm disappointed that we've lost so many troopers and that we don't have VPSOs in rural Alaska. So can you talk to us about what you're going to do to fight crime both in urban and rural Alaska?
Very quickly, on my website, also baggage.com, I got to give a little pitch there. There's more detailed plan. But one of the first things we need to do, as I said earlier, the 40 state trooper positions that are empty but funded, we need to fill them. The corrections, the same thing. We need to also focus on new and innovative approaches. For example, I would love to get two state prosecutors that we could assign to the U.S. Attorney's Office, similar to what I did when I was mayor, and we assign them to focus on what I consider hard criminals, people are dealing drugs. Why do you do that? Because if you prosecute them under the federal laws, you'll get a minimum of 10-year sentencing. These hardcore drug dealers need to be sent out of state to federal penitentiaries and solve this problem, because if you don't do that, they continue to distribute the drugs throughout our communities, especially in rural Alaska. The other thing is, I don't want to wake up in the morning and look outside my door and see my car stolen. I think we need to be more aggressive and accountable for those first-time offenders, just as we did, again, when I was mayor with youth court and young people. We need to do this with adults, because if you don't deal with them on the first-time offense, then they're going to perpetuate, and next thing you know, they're on their third or fourth offense. And lastly, and there's more in our plan on the website, but lastly, we do need to recognize 80% of the people within our correctional institutions are substance abuse in some form or another. We need to find the people who are willing to change their lives, want to move forward, and move them into programs like Wellness Court, which is an incredible program, puts people back on the right track. So it's a multifaceted approach. And lastly, on the VPSOs, Village Police Officers, they need to be paid better, have better training. As Deborah laid out earlier, we need to do this cross-training with our urban police officers so there's an extended experience they would have to use and take back to their villages.
All right.
I was trying to be quick there on a big subject.
You were, yes. And, we have about 1 minute left. Just quickly, how viable do you think the LNG gas line plan is? Is it realistic? Is it going to be done?
You know, we've been dreaming about it for 40 years. I know the governor had a signing yesterday. We don't know the details, and I guess they're not going to tell those publicly about what the price is, what the deal is, what the trade-off was for the company. So, you know, it is an important project, but we can't survive on this boom and bust, just one project and hope it all works. As you said earlier at the beginning of your opening, we need to focus on diversifying this economy in a much more aggressive way. Find things that we're not doing that we know we can do well. You know, why do we have 27% of our teachers statewide that are only from Alaska? We can do better than that by training our own, building our own. So we have to think about this in a much broader perspective. Pipeline's important. I'll support it. But at the end of the day, it's not the end all and not the solution to solve all our woes. We need to be focused on a much more broader long-term plan.
Final thought, Deborah, in just a few seconds.
Great. Thank you, Lori. Workforce development is an important element, not only for urban Alaska, but for rural Alaska. In order to fulfill the jobs that we're seeing in the future, which includes renewable energy as well as in the law enforcement, the workforce development element needs to be emphasized and taken seriously within our K-12 as well as our post-secondary.
All right. Thank you so much to my guests for today, Democrat Mark Begich, candidate for governor, and also Deborah Call, lieutenant governor candidate. If you missed any of today's program, you can listen again at our website, and on Friday, tune into Alaska Insight on public television for more on Mark Begich's bid to be governor. Last week's program is also available at alaskapublic.org/Alaska Insight. Next week, the incumbent independent Bill Walker joins us on Talk of Alaska.
Alaska is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. Lead is bad for the health of Alaskans, especially for young children. It affects developing brains, so even small amounts are unsafe. Lead can be hiding in older paint, workplaces, ammunition, fishing weights, aviation gas, and marine paint. If you think you or your child has been exposed, ask a healthcare provider about testing. Get the lead out, Alaska. Learn more at leadfree.dhss.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.